Pennsylvania.
From the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. This morning on today's show, the Delaware Highlands Conservancy, a land trust dedicated to protecting the Upper Delaware region, we'll find out more about the properties permanently protected by the group and some of their upcoming events. Sullivan 180, they're protecting a healthier generation, one degree at a time. Schools participating in the Sullivan 180 Empowering a Healthier Generation competition are gearing up. We'll hear more about it this morning from Megan Mullally-Gore. And a benefit concert for Catskill Animal Rescue. Valerie Manzi speaks to singer Patty Greco Sunshine, who's doing the benefit to help local animals, plus Work Shift Live, local economic perspective from James B. Huntington. But first, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Today is the 22nd anniversary of the terror attacks on the United States. Memorial events are now underway in New York. As is tradition, friends and families of the victims at the World Trade Center in New York took turns reading the victims' names aloud.
Gordon M. Amath, Jr.
Adomiro Abad.
Marie Rose Abad.
Andrew Anthony Abate.
Vincent Paul Abate.
Lawrence Christopher Abel.
Alona Abraham.
William F. Abrahamson.
In the first hour of the attacks on that day, three planes flew into the World Trade Center towers and the Pentagon. Passengers aboard a fourth plane worked to stop the hijackers there. That plane crashed into a rural field in central Pennsylvania. Congress has a tight deadline this month to pass a spending bill that would keep federal agencies funded through the next fiscal year. NPR's Windsor Johnston reports that without an agreement, parts of the government could shut down on October 1st.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says neither party can afford to go it alone if lawmakers want to avoid a shutdown.
We're going to have to work together, just as we have done in the Senate, without resorting to extremism and unseemly tactics. And that message is intended for the House Republicans and the House Republican leadership. In particular,
the House returns from its summer recess this week and is expected to take up its own version of a government spending bill. But internal disputes within the Republican caucus over the budget could slow the process. Ultimately, it will be up to House Speaker Kevin McCarthy to move legislation through the chamber. Windsor Johnston, NPR News, Washington.
Stocks open higher this morning as investors wait for new inflation data this week. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose about 77 points in early trading.
The Labor Department is set to report the latest Consumer Price Index on Wednesday. Forecasters expect it to show that prices in August were up about 3.5% from a year ago. Consumer prices in China rose last month in a turnaround from the month before. That's a positive sign for the world's second largest economy, which has been struggling with weak consumer demand. Boeing shares are gaining altitude after Vietnam agreed to buy 50 new 737 jets. The deal was announced during President Biden's visit to Hanoi. And J.M. Smucker is buying Hostess Brands in a $5.6 billion deal that puts Jif peanut butter and Twinkies in the same corporate lunchbox. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow is now up 65 points. You're listening to NPR. The Kremlin confirms that Russian President Vladimir Putin has invited North Korean leader Kim Jong-un to Russia for a visit. They're expected to meet as soon as tomorrow in the eastern Russian port city of Vladivostok. It'll be at an economic forum. South Korean media is reporting that Kim's train has already begun its journey. U.S. officials claim Putin is seeking to buy North Korean weapons, possibly in exchange for food and technological support. Tennis star Novak Djokovic won the U.S. Open men's final yesterday over Daniil Medvedev. As Harrison Malkin reports, Djokovic now has won the most majors in tennis history, and he also captured his fourth U.S. Open crown.
Novak Djokovic was flooded with emotion after defeating Daniil Medvedev 6-3, 7-6, 6-3 in just over 3 hours. Djokovic ran into the crowd afterwards, embracing his family and even Matthew McConaughey in the player box. Djokovic came out with his 24th Grand Slam title and his third of the year. He's the oldest man in the professional era to win the U.S. Open. It was Medvedev's third U.S. Open final in 5 years, but Djokovic put on a dominant performance, taking 3 clean sets in a row. For NPR News, I'm Harrison Malkin.
It could be 105 degrees today in Phoenix, but the city's excessive heat warning has expired. Yesterday, it hit 112 degrees. Phoenix has set a record of 55 days this year for temperatures reaching at least 110 degrees. The city has just experienced the hottest 3 months on record. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Heather Sturt Haga and Paul G. Haga, supporting African Wildlife Foundation, working to ensure wildlife and wild lands thrive in modern Africa. Learn more at awf.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Delaware Highlands Conservancy is a land trust dedicated to conserving the natural heritage and quality of life in the Upper Delaware River region in partnership with the region's landowners and communities. The group has protected 18,900 acres to date. Joining us this morning to tell us more about the Conservancy and their upcoming events is Samantha Mango, Director, Donor Relations Coordinator. Good morning.
Good morning, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. Wow, 18,900 acres protected already in the area, which is amazing. And, you know, I had the honor of going to the Upper Delaware Council's Community Awards last evening, where our own Rosie Starr from Farm and Country was honored, received a special recognition.
Oh, awesome.
And then there was also a group, the Delaware Sojourn steering committee comprised of a lot of different organizations in the area, Friends of the Upper Delaware, all different types of organizations. And I was struck by how many people in this area are dedicated to preserving the quality of life.
Yeah.
Can you talk about Delaware Highlands Conservancy and where they fit in, where you fit into this and what your mission is?
Sure. Yeah. Well, our mission is to conserve the forests, farmlands, clean waters, and wildlife habitat of the Upper Delaware River region. So we work on both sides of the river in Pennsylvania and New York. In Pennsylvania, we primarily work in Wayne and Pike counties. In New York, we work in Sullivan and Delaware counties and sort of along that Delaware River region.
And you work in cooperation, we said, with communities and landowners. How do you do that? Do you know, if I had a parcel of land, I would call you up, right? I mean, what are the qualifications? What do you look for in trying to preserve certain areas? Do you target certain areas or how does that work?
Yeah. So, we primarily do our work in, land protection through conservation easements. And a conservation easement is a voluntary but legally binding agreement between a landowner and the Delaware Highlands Conservancy or any conservancy, to permanently protect a portion or all of the land's natural value. So we really look for characteristics such as farms, forest, wetlands, meadows, riverfront, ponds, something that can highlight natural heritage of the river region.
We've certainly seen an influx of people coming up and staying here, more people in the area, more homes being built.
Yes.
You know, so can you talk a little bit about why it's important to protect this land in this corridor?
Yeah, it's important for a lot of different reasons. We have a big history in agriculture, so protecting the farmland is very important to make sure agriculture stays a main part of our economic portion of Sullivan County, Delaware County, Wayne County, Pike County, and also to preserve the land, make sure that there's habitats for wildlife and there's clean water, because the water affects not just us who live here and drink it, but all the way down to New York City.
Yeah, it's we're all a part of this.
Yes.
You recently, this summer, there was a new property that was permanently protected in Sullivan County.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that and help explain to the listener like how that came about and you know why?
Yeah, it was actually a big partnership. I think you're referring to Confluence Flats. Mm-hmm. It's the part where the East and the West Branch of the Delaware meet, a couple acres in that area. And it was a big partnership between Norcross, us, to conserve the land. And it's really important because you see that on both sides of the river, you see how that portion of the river affects the rest of it downstream.
It's 5,300 feet of frontage on the west branch and main stem of the Delaware River, and 935 feet of frontage on the Shehawken Creek. I want to make sure I say it correctly. But it will be forever protected,
forever,
is that right?
In perpetuity, yes.
Yeah.
And that's part of another portion of our work is after our land is permanently protected through conservation easement, we steward it, we monitor each conservation easement property every year.
And this is a private piece of land, not open to the public. Are there
Correct.
Public parts that are open?
Our actual headquarters, the Vanscott Nature Reserve in Beech Lake, Pennsylvania, is a preserve open to the public. So it has 3 miles of walking trails that's open from sunrise to sunset.
And then also making some news this summer, Sullivan County, another property permanently protected by the Delaware Highlands Conservancy, 49 acres located in Eldred in the town of Highland.
Yeah.
Now, again, permanently protected, owned by Victoria Kohler, adjacent to the Hickok Brook multiple use area. So that's going to help provide an important wildlife habitat and protect water quality and all of those things.
Water, she's got a brook that runs through her property as well as forest land. So it's very important, and especially when we're looking at other preserved properties and state lands.
And you mentioned the Vanscott Nature Reserve, and you have events coming up. Let's talk about some of those events that are coming up.
Yes, we have so many events coming up. We do events almost weekly at the reserve, our education events. So you can find out more at DelawareHighlands.org/events. And we have a big fundraiser coming up on Sunday, October 1st. It's the Taste of the Harvest Concert and Brunch with Jay Unger and Molly Mason. It's featuring a locally sourced brunch and cider tasting, and we are honoring Sonia Hedlund and Dick Reisling from Apple Pond Farm.
You do know them.
Well,
and of course, Apple Pond Farm had gone through some terrible devastation earlier this year with a tornado that came through.
Yeah.
So it's good to highlight and help them out. But also, it's a preserved area as well.
Yeah.
Apple Pond Farm is part of the conservancy.
81 acres through the conservancy that is protected in perpetuity.
I find it amazing that when we talk about this, that it's protected in perpetuity, because sometimes you think, oh, that's great for now, and then eventually some developer is going to come in and take it over. But
no,
this
it
is
can't.
Not. It can't.
Yep. It is permanent. So when land does change hands and a new owner comes in, we form a relationship with them. But they have to be well aware that we have a legal interest in the property, and we will fight to protect it.
Part of the agreement. Yeah. So Taste of the Harvest is coming up October 1st at 11:30. You mentioned some other things too, your conservation conversations. There's one coming up tomorrow, actually.
Yeah, it's on Zoom, and it's for anyone who's interested in learning more about conservation and conservation easements and the Delaware Highlands in general.
And a meadow party on the 17th.
Yeah, that's going to be fun for families. So if you'd like to get your family out and you want to come on over to Beech Lake, we're going to have a day of fun. There's going to be lots of entertainment and activities. You get to hang out on our 144 acres, and we're going to have a food truck. Lupo Russo from Scranton is going to be there, wood-fired pizza, and free. So come hang out.
And anything else you want folks to know about that are coming up, the events that are coming up in the next couple weeks or this fall?
Oh, we just have so many. So please keep an eye out on our calendar on our website, DelawareHighlands.org. And you can also follow us on Facebook. We always post our events there. And most of them are education events. So they're free or a small donation. Get involved. If you're interested, we are looking for volunteers. If you want to come help us, we have volunteer opportunities for everyone.
And if I were a landowner and wanted to explore the possibility of donating my land or conserving my land in perpetuity, what are some of the minimal requirements, and then how would I get involved?
If you're interested and you're hearing this, I would take Conservation Conversations webinar tomorrow with Trey and Kaylin, our land protection team. But you can also give us a call at 570-226-3164 and speak to Trey Talley or Kaylin Hubbard. They are our land protection team. Or go to our website,
DelawareHighlands.org.
Yes.
All right. Samantha Mango, Donor Relations Coordinator for Delaware Highlands Conservancy. Thank you for coming in. And
thank you so
for
much.
All you're doing to protect the land and the water in our region.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
We'll take a quick break. And when we come back, Sullivan 180, Empowering a Healthier Generation. This is Radio Chatskill.
Hey, John Gordon here to ask the question, where would we be without music? I love music, and I play a lot of it right here on WJFF every Thursday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. Please tune in. That's Ramble Tamble, Thursdays 7 to 9 p.m. on WJFF.
I'm Cassie of Rare Pair Radio. It's a weekly showcase of primarily female artists, but also a wide range of avant-garde musicians, the fruit of post-punk, experimental, and fringe music.
Your eyes are set on stars. I love to see you shine because you really blow my mind.
Rare Pair Radio, Friday at 8 p.m.
Your heart beats like a drum.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Sullivan 180 is empowering a healthier generation. They are working to turn around our health statistics one step at a time, one policy at a time. And here to tell us more about it is Megan Mullally Gore from Sullivan 180. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Let's talk a little bit about the Empowering a Healthier Generation initiative. You're part of this initiative. You're heading it up in some ways, right? Have that right? So this, can you explain to folks who may not recall what is this about in terms of Sullivan 180 and what you're trying to do?
Sure. So as you mentioned, Sullivan 180's mission is to turn around the health of Sullivan County one degree at a time. And how else do we do that besides reaching for our youth? So the Empowering a Healthier Generation program is in all of the Sullivan County public schools. We have a healthier generation advisor that is stipended in all of our 22 school buildings in the county, and they are charged with applying for grants through the EHG program. That's what we call it for short, EHG.
That's what the cool kids call it.
Yes, and that is to work on health and wellness initiatives in each of the school buildings. So district-wide, there's eight districts and BOCES, and they have a wellness coordinator for the entire district. So we wanted to build a small army of people working on health and wellness initiatives.
So you've got 22 of these advisors in all the different schools. Mm-hmm. And then as part of that, there's a competition.
Yes.
You facilitated a competition among them. Can you tell us a little bit about that competition?
Yes, definitely. So we kicked off the EHG program in January of 2021, and we wanted everybody to get their feet wet. Schools don't really have grant writers anymore. Some do. So they're the lucky ones. So we wanted these HG advisors to get their feet wet and see what it's like to apply for grants and to implement projects. So we waited a little while. And in the second year, this was last school year, 2022-23, we invited all of those 22 buildings to apply for a larger grant, $5,000 grant, and they would be in competition for a second place award of $50,000 and first place award of $75,000.
Wow.
Yes. And now's the time. So that work was all done in the last school year. And on September 21st, we have our big celebration at Bethel Woods. And we have three distinguished judges coming in from out of county. We can't have any biases. and they will visit the schools and they'll see presentations. And they will decide who gets those two large awards. There's five schools competing.
Who are the five schools?
We have Benjamin Koser Elementary, and that's part of Fallsburg, the Cook Elementary School from Monticello District, Sullivan West Elementary, and then Livingston Manor Elementary and Livingston Manor Middle and High School. So those are two separate. They're competing against each other.
There's a lot of competition in the manor.
Yes.
So these judges will come in and evaluate these the entries into the competition, and then the folks will know on the 21st?
Yeah, I won't even know.
Oh, wow.
I'm so excited. They've all done incredible projects. There's three judges that are coming in. We have what we've been referring to as judging week. So the entire week leading up to the celebration itself, they'll first be out here in Liberty, watching presentations from the school health and wellness advisors, the wellness coordinator, some administration will come. They'll give a full presentation on the work that they've completed and then have a Q&A. And then the judges get into vehicles and they're driven around the county to visit each of those five school buildings. And then it all culminates at the EHG celebration. So there will be deliberation beforehand. And, you know, nobody from my team will know who the winner is. So we're all so excited and looking forward to that celebration.
This sounds kind of intense.
It's so intense, but it's the best type of intense.
Yeah. And then, the reasons you're doing it,
of course. Yeah, of course. The projects have been incredible. But simultaneously, while this competition has been happening, all of those other schools have still been implementing health and wellness work. They applied for school grants, the Healthier Generation school grants. So they were $2,000. So there's been some amazing standout projects there. And we also have Turtle Awards. Turtle Awards are every year. They're in the amount of $500. So all 22 schools have been up for those Turtle Awards, and we'll see who wins.
Can you tell us a little bit about some of the competition entries? Like what are kinds of things are people showing
working
as part of
on?
This?
Yeah. Sullivan West Elementary purchased Miss Kendra program. It's a social emotional learning curriculum that's been implemented in their elementary school. So that's been very, very exciting for them. Livingston Manor, both Livingston Manor schools and Fallsburg School purchased the walking classroom. So it's really cool. It's a podcast based MP3 player. There's 167 preloaded podcasts that go along with the school curriculum, and the kids wear the headphones and they go out and they walk. They don't have to talk to each other. They just walk and they listen to the lesson. There's pretests and post-tests. So they've been doing that inside or out on their nature trails. So it's just a different way to learn. Mm-hmm. Livingston Manor also purchased snowshoes for students and staff, and really they've opened the snowshoe use to the community. And then the Cook School in Monticello District, they did a wellness program, an employee wellness program, where they invited the entire district, not just their building, to participate in things like Zumba, mindfulness, yoga. It's been incredible.
So if one of these schools wins one of these bigger awards mm-hmm. on the 21st, what would they be able to do with like the $75,000 or $50,000?
Well, what's so interesting is that part of the judging, they had to submit an expression of intent.
Of what they would do.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
okay.
That's part of the...
So nobody's getting a new car.
No, it has to be health and wellness. It has to be sustainable and reach the entire, you know, a large portion of the district. So those ideas will be shared too. And we're so excited to find out. We've heard rumblings, but because it's a competition, some of the superintendents and the Healthier Generation advisors have been like, you're just going to have to wait and see.
You know, as director of health and wellness for Sullivan 180, mm-hmm. you're seeing everything, right? How does empowering a healthier generation sort of help charge this effort you have at Sullivan 180 overall to turn things around, you know, one degree at a time? You know, we see the stats and everything, but there's got to be more of like an emotional connection for you as well on a daily basis, seeing
Definitely.
These younger people getting involved.
Yeah. So I grew up in Sullivan County, so I know what it was like for me. And now I have three teenagers in Sullivan West School District. So it's very, very personal for me. And then from my vantage point, I've been able to see what goes on from boots on the ground work in the school districts up to the superintendents and where they're coming from and what they're interested in and talking about nutrition and physical activity. And then we have all of the school resources. So there's over 30 organizations in Sullivan County that offer free resources to schools and to youth. So there's so many angles that you could look at the health and wellness of all of our county members. And it's cross-generational, too. So we have grandparents and we have grandchildren that all need to benefit from a change in our overall health. And the schools are just one avenue. Sullivan 180 still has many different programs we offer to the municipalities and healthier community grants, beautification. So we're coming at it from a lot of different angles. And there's so many people that are passionate about it. And I think that's what's going to set us up for long-term success.
Are you getting some free advice from your teenagers about what works and what doesn't work?
Yes. Yes. So school lunch is really a hot topic oftentimes. So I hear it from them. I hear it from their friends. And I have had the great pleasure of visiting several lunchrooms. We've gone to Liberty. We've gone to Livingston Manor. We've been talking to food service directors. And I think one of the long-term goals for not only Sullivan 180, but for Cornell Cooperative Extension and a lot of other people working in the community is to have two healthy, hearty meals for our kids. They're getting a really good breakfast. They're getting a really good lunch, and that it's all free. It's not all free yet for all of our Sullivan County students. During COVID, there was some money that made lunch free for breakfast and lunch free for everybody, but that funding has ended. Mm-hmm. So between what's going on at the food hub and the resources with Farm to School and Cornell Cooperative Extension, I think we'll be able to answer that for the kids.
So the Empowering a Healthier Generation competition culminates with the awards on the 21st. Mm-hmm. Is there another competition that's for this next school year that will happen? Or are there other things on the agenda for this school year?
Yes. So we will have pretty exciting announcements after the celebration. Okay. We have to get through this. But this we're in this for the long run. So another grant cycle begins as soon as the celebration is over. So this is just ongoing. We're going to be announcing more grants and a different timeline. So we're very excited about that.
Well, that just means we'll have to have you back.
Oh, yes, please.
So let's remind folks about where they can get more information about the competition. Sure. And Sullivan 180.
Great. So please visit us at Sullivan180.org. You could find us on social media. We are on both Facebook and Instagram, where we share a lot of our different community outreach and ways for you to become involved. You could become a volunteer for Sullivan 180, a community health champion for Sullivan 180, and you could get involved at a much more local level and join your school building or school district's wellness committee or healthier generation committee.
We've been talking to Megan Mullally-Gore, Director of Health and Wellness for Sullivan 180 this morning. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, it's Work Shift Live, Local Economic Perspective from author and economist James B. Huntington. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com.
Tavern on Main, a neighborhood bar and restaurant on Main Street in Jeffersonville, New York, featuring local American fare, specialty cocktails, craft beers, and Sunday brunch. Menu and hours online at tavernonmainny.com.
And from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Radio Catskills Community Awards return September 28th. Join us as we honor the Chandelier Music Festival and Weekend of Chamber Music, both of which are celebrating their 30th anniversaries this year, plus many other local arts organizations. There will be hors d'oeuvres, drinks, good company, and you. Radio Catskills Community Awards, September 28th, Seminary Hill Orchard and Cidery, Calicoon. Tickets at wjffradio.org.
Move Sullivan, Sullivan County's free bus system, helps people get around. Whether they're going to work on time Monday through Friday, visiting doctors in Monticello, Liberty, Rock Hill, and Harris, or heading to class at SUNY Sullivan. Move Sullivan helps people shop in downtown Wurtsboro or Conneaugga Lake, or takes them to the Coach USA bus station so they can go even farther. Info at movesullivan.com or 845-434-4102. Move Sullivan, connecting our communities. Paid for by Sullivan County Government.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. And it's Monday, so it means it's Work Shift Live with our own author, economist, James B. Huntington. Good morning, James B. Huntington.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
Hey, we missed you last Monday, but it was Labor Day, so I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming, getting back into the swing of things here. Let's talk about catching up on things. What did we miss with the most recent jobs report?
Yes, well, we had unemployment going up 3.5 to 3.8%. That's the seasonally adjusted variety. The unadjusted one was up a tenth of a percent to 3.9%. Most of that was surprising firings and layoffs and strikes and a lot of things like that. But the number of officially unemployed went up 600,000, and those with jobs, though, only lost 55,000. We had number of long-term unemployed for a year or longer, or actually 6 months or longer, up to 1.3 million, up 100,000. We have the labor force participation rate up 0.2% to 62.8, and the employment population ratio staying the same at 60.4. Wages gained 8 cents per hour, close, but a tiny bit less than inflation, to $33.82. The American job shortage number, or AJSN, showing latent demand for jobs, if all knew they would be easy to get, went up about 100,000 and is now at 16.8 million.
And we've talked about a lot about people going back to work in the offices ever since COVID. A lot of people were doing more remote work, and even with COVID on the rise a little bit this summer, there's still a push for more in-person work in workplaces that have allowed people to be remote since the pandemic. And that includes the federal government, the nation's largest employer. What's going on with some of the federal workers working from home, and why do they want them to come back to the office more, including the president, I guess?
Well, starting with the president, none other than Joe Biden sent out this request that people need to go back to their offices. It's getting a pendulum back and forth. That's what we've had for a long time, between working in the office and working at home, and then they rediscover the advantages, the problems of working at home, and then they rediscover the advantages of working from home, and it goes back and forth, and now we are moving quite strongly toward going back to the office. So it's the same sort of things. We're getting critiques of how much people are really producing when they're away from the office, problems with individual people who you might not really want to be working from home, ending up often being the ones who do that the most time. So it's in progress, and we can expect, or federal workers can expect, at least 8 days a month in the office. That's less than a lot. That's actually quite mild. If there is anything that is a norm around the country, it would be 3 days a week instead of two. So they're getting off relatively easy, but it's just a way of saying that federal employees are not exempt from trends that are going on around the country in for-profit propositions.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the economic news this week. We heard on NPR News earlier about the Justice Department taking on Google over whether the tech giant has used its dominance in search to squash rivals. This is reminiscent of the government antitrust issues against Microsoft and browsers.
Exactly.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about what's going on there?
Well, we don't really know. It's because of their dominance in search. It's the same sort of thing as Microsoft, where somebody through mostly market forces ends up being the only choice people are making. I mean, month by month, year by year, Google is becoming the search engine when there used to be a lot of them around now. So they're going to look into that. They're going to see if that there is any problem or whatever, to see if they use their dominance to search to squash rivals. That's rather a tough thing to judge, but that's what they'll be doing. So we don't know what they'll come up with or how much money it will involve.
Yeah, and the Justice Department is even pointing to that Microsoft case, saying that the company's tactics in the 90s are similar to what Google is doing now, although Google is, I guess, paying partners to make the browser, the search browser, as part of their default on smartphones and other devices. Speaking of other devices, Apple is set to release its latest iPhone model. I'm so far behind, I think I still have the Apple 6. But this is supposed to be the priciest one yet, and it doesn't seem to have impacted Apple's market share.
Well, their customers are quite willing to change mobile phones to get the latest and greatest every 6 months or so. So that's what they have to keep issuing them. I see the changes we're getting is really more incremental than fundamental. There's nothing huge probably going to go on here. It'll be a little bit better. I don't know about speed. Speed seems to have topped out in most computing or electronic related things. So don't expect anything more there, but it's another issue, and it will drive some sales for them also. If they end up discounting the current models, they may sell even more. So if anything, it's good news for Google.
For Apple. More coming up this week in terms of economic data. Wednesday, the consumer price index, and then retail sales for August on Thursday, and the producer price index. Can you tell us what kind of clues that might offer in terms of inflation and the economy?
Well, the big one is the consumer price index, which is inflation, actually. It is the entire inflation reading. It was 3.2% a month ago. It will be important to see whether it goes up or down and by how much. So we don't really know if inflation is topping out. If it gets higher, it's almost certain that the next chance the Fed gets to raise interest rates, they're going to do it. So be prepared for that based on the data that comes out on Wednesday, and I will have that for you next week.
Right. All right, let's talk about stock, oil, precious metal, the prices last week. How did things change?
Okay, this is over 2 weeks because I was
gone
last week. So gold is $1,926. All of these prices are as of very early this morning. That's up $12 from 2 weeks ago. It's gold is sort of wandering around the low 1900s with no real direction. Silver dropped almost a dollar to $23.16. It gave up its surprising gains a month or two ago, and now it's about where the gold-silver ratio is 83 point something, which is quite normal historically. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, 34,577, which is up 220 for the 2 weeks. That's good to see it going up. It is mild, but I think the direction for stocks is going to be positive. That's also accentuated by the NASDAQ, which went up 172 for 13,762, doing even better. We don't know. There's a lot of possible churn and volatility going on in the tech stocks, which are heaviest in NASDAQ. So we may see more extreme things both up and down. Oil was the real story. Over the 2 weeks, it went up $7. It's now at $87.20. Bad news. It's understandable. The world is really getting going in a lot of ways again, and that fuels demand. Bitcoin, $25,797, down $144. Maybe it's still slowly dropping, but it might spend a good while in the 25 somewhere with volatility, of course. British pound is down almost half a cent to 125.27, and the euro is down 88 hundredths of a cent to 107.19. Both of those are likewise, the eurozone and Britain are not doing as well as the U.S. at all economically right now, and that is holding their currency down. The Japanese 100 yen coin held at 68 cents. That one can only go down so much, and it seems to be there now.
All right. James B. Huntington joins us Mondays with Workshift Live. Thank you so much, and we'll look forward to hearing your local economic perspective next Monday.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, listeners.
And stay on some economic and labor news. The Hudson Valley Area Labor Federation is representative of 103,000 families belonging to unions across seven counties in Columbia, Dutchess, Green, Orange, Rockland, Sullivan, and Ulster. Jason Dole spoke to Sparrow Tobin, president of the Hudson Valley Area Labor Federation.
What are some goals, key goals that you believe labor in general and your labor union in particular should strive for in the coming years to keep enhancing the rights and well-being of workers?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways everything's the same, and some ways everything's changing. Good news is we've did some polling this year, and 88% of young people, so that's almost 9 out of 10 people, support unions. Two out of three people support unions. So union, the idea of a union is has major support in the country. But as we as the economy changes, we have to change and adapt with it. And as the jobs change, our goal is to make sure that the new jobs that are created are good union jobs. We don't want to replace, good union jobs. For example, if you're the folks building the buses, and now all of a sudden the buses are changing over to electric buses, new companies are coming into the market. We don't want them to go from union jobs that made buses to non-union companies. So we're trying to keep up with the changing economy as things change. And we believe that doesn't have to be like one thing or another. For example, like the climate, we need to address the climate changes and the environment. And, we can't be, we have to have new jobs, but they don't have to be union jobs. We want these new jobs in the green economy to be union jobs and good jobs. And so that's our challenge, is to, one, kind of keep up with the changes, and two, to organize people that want to join a union. I think, if you just heard that song, Richmond, North of Richmond, a lot of working people, I think, feel powerless today. They feel frustrated. I think the chorus is overtime hours for BS pay. I mean, people feel, powerless. And, I think the answer to that is to join a union, because unions are better. I don't like the rest of the song. It kind of puts down people that are obese, but, it shows the frustration that people have. The Richmond North of Richmond, you think he's talking about politicians there, and some of them are tone deaf. I know I watched the recent Republican debate, and they asked the people about that song, and instead of like having had a chance to address the frustrations of working people, I think one of the gentlemen on the stage said, I think the song means we need to make Joe Biden a one-term president, and totally whiffed on the answer. That's not what the song's about. It's about people being frustrated that they're working and they feel powerless in the job. So, that's why we're pushing to organize. You see it throughout the country. I think there was over 300 strikes this year. Wow. All different sectors. And I think 300,000 people participated in those strikes. So it's always a fight.
That's part of the thing that I, ordinarily I would say that I feel like the message isn't really getting through to folks. Like you say, there's frustrations. It does seem like sometimes those frustrations aren't being directed in the most useful directions, at least in terms of labor accomplishments and historic ones.
Right.
And I would say that, I'm not seeing a lot of energy or excitement out there because of maybe what I'm hearing in the news. But at the same time, there's been so much news in recent years of big news of union advancements in places where they hadn't even been before. For example, like the Starbucks efforts getting traction, and you're saying 300 strikes. I mean, that shows a lot of energy and interest.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of years ago we didn't have any Starbucks organized. Now they're all throughout the country because unions address issues like there's a gender pay gap, there's a racial pay gap. It's better if you're a woman, it's better to be in the union. If you're a person of color, it's better to be in the union. If you're LGBTQ, it's better to be in the union, because we address issues of pay inequity and fighting for people to get a voice at the workplace, but also fair pay and compensation. Because as I mentioned before, like some things always stay the same. I mean, it's always a tug of war between a company, talk about big corporations, there's the cost of doing business, labor's part of that, but there's also profits at the end. And how much of the profit do you give to the workers? And, there's a tug of war. If you're not in a union, there's just one person trying to, ask for better working conditions. But when you're in the union, you're a collective group of people and you're tug of war and you're saying, no, some of these profits need to be part of our wages. And we have big corporations like Walmart that made fortunes, paying their workers as little as possible, and then, and reaping the profits. And they're the worst example because, not not only do they pay their workers so low, they also, the people are paid so little that they have, a lot of them that depend on government assistance to get by. So in fact, taxpayers are subsidizing these, you know, multinational, these, you know, these corporations that are, you know, making, reaping billions of profit, but they're not sharing with their workers. And I think you're seeing that with the SAG-AFTRA strike. I mean, in the beginning, I think Netflix and Disney, you know, the streaming services, it was kind of like a new thing, you know, starting a new way of, you know, distributing content and entertainment. And so they didn't, I think, insist on a larger chunk of, you know, the profit that they're making. But if you look at after COVID, I mean, a lot of people now, you know, they're getting most of their entertainment through the internet, through the streaming services. So you see the you know, the screenwriters, the actors are striking because they, you know, they want, they deserve to have a decent living and provide for their families. It's not just the superstar, you know, the Brad Pitts. It's everybody that's involved in making them. So, you know, it's not fair if Disney or Netflix they're making a fortune on these, on this content that the workers are creating, you know, they need to be paid fairly. And so the strike is like the ultimate last weapon that we have to fight greed. You know, if the actors don't act, there are no movies. So they need to compensate them fairly.
You know, you mentioned a number of labor concerns, you know, gender pay gap, a lot of these issues. I'm wondering what's front of mind for you when it comes to how these issues play out locally in the Hudson Valley. Like, what exactly are you working on right now? What are your members, your constituents, most concerned about?
Well, we have, housing is a major concern with our members. Because we're so close to the city, you know, we saw this after 9/11. People, after COVID, a lot of people moved out of the city. They moved north. They sold their houses in the city, and they moved north to Orange, Rockland, Dutchess, Sullivan. And that has put a burden on our housing stock that, you know, the cost of housing has gone up. There's a shortage of rentals available. And, you know, you see a lot of the bigger rental unit apartment complexes have decided to raise their rents. Just because they can, not that their costs went up so much, but just they're trying to figure out how much money they can squeeze out of people. And so I think they say you shouldn't pay more than 30% of your income towards housing, but we have folks that are paying 50% of their income to pay for rent. And so, you know, it's an issue that we're looking at and concerned with, as far as our workers, and we're trying to see if we can partner maybe with the community and our elected officials to see what we can do about addressing, you know, this housing crisis, because it's, you know, it's tough on the working folks if you have to put such a large chunk of your salary towards housing, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And we're seeing, I mean, as you were talking about, like, the issues that affect workers, it's like, It affects so many other things. And one of the first things I was thinking of is the fact that people might look at the world now and say, like, well, there's so many people that are still living with their parents or grandparents. They don't get a place of their own. It's like, well, that dynamic that you're talking about, corporations paying people less and less, that's one of the results that you get, you know, just as, right. People not having health insurance provided by their employer or not being paid enough to cover their own health needs causes them to be less healthy, which incurs an even greater cost for them and for society. Like, so much of this comes right from this running things right to the edge of what can you get out of workers and give, how little can you give in return. And that's absolutely part of this housing issue. And again, we're covering that issue locally in so many different ways. So that's one of the local things you're looking at. But we do know there's like labor rights, workers' rights often extend beyond national borders. So if we go in the other directions, are you doing anything that connects with international labor organizations?
We're trying to, like, you know, in Europe is heavily unionized. And then so we see some companies that kind of do the right thing in Europe, but then they come, you know, they open up a shop in the United States, and then all of a sudden they're union busters and they don't want to provide for, you know, good wages and benefits for their workers. Meanwhile, maybe in Germany they're doing the right thing. And so we're trying to hold some of the international companies' feet to the fire to make sure that they, you know, provide good union jobs here in America. Also, the, you know, the trade agreements, trying to make sure, that's really tough, like make sure that they're supporting workers' rights to organize, not just in America, but in like other countries as well. We think we have it tough, and, you know, try to organize a, you know, a union in some of these countries, you might disappear, you know, like they might arrest you, you might just go missing. So we think that any part of these international trade agreements need to include protections for the right to organize in those countries as well. And make sure they're fair for American workers too. I mean, we're fighting sending jobs overseas for years now. And the CEOs are getting rewarded for it. I mean, it used to be 56 years ago, the CEO made 20 times the average worker. You know what it is today? I think it's like 270 times the average worker. So, you know, they ship jobs overseas and then increase their own salary. So it's, you know, we need to find some balance. You know, we can produce things in America. And we're seeing that with the infrastructure bill, the semiconductor chips bill. I mean, there's going to be a lot of investment back into America. So, you know, I think this is a good time to be in. A lot of big projects coming down, and I think we're going to benefit because we've seen, you know, the effects of globalization. We send everything overseas. I mean, it's not good for the economy. It might be cheaper to buy a TV, but in the end run, you know, it's a tremendous loss of good jobs.
We're going to have to go now. Sparrow, do you have any events or anything that's coming up that you want folks to know about for the Labor Federation?
Yeah, you can check our website out. We're continuing to work on housing. If you want to start a union, contact us. We know a lot of people have. We get a lot of people, especially this year and recently, just walking into our office saying, you know, I'm fed up with things at work, you know, help me start a union. So we're looking to help people if you're interested.
That's Sparrow Tobin, president of the Hudson Valley Area Labor Federation, speaking to Jason Dole last week. Now, Catskill Animal Rescue was established in 2014 to address the critical lack of resources in Sullivan County for unwanted, neglected, and abused animals. Catskill Animal Rescue is a nonprofit in Liberty that provides low-cost spaying, neutering, adoption services, and more for animals in need. Radio Catskill's Valerie Manzi spoke to Sullivan County singer Patty Greco Sunshine, who will be performing a concert for Catskill Animal Rescue on Friday, September 22nd.
It's always a pleasure to do something for the Catskill Animal Rescue because they are the angels that if your pet goes missing, they're out there trying to find your pet. If an animal is hurt, this is what they do. They rescue animals. They help place them in loving homes. They rescue them from not so loving homes. And I think for me, I've always had a stray, or, you know, that found me, or I've adopted. I've always adopted from a shelter. I've always, you know, taken in, you know, that's just been my thing. So doing something for, you know, I always say I like animals better than people, pretty much. You know?
Oh, okay.
you know, there's no question what they feel. You don't have to question about whether they like you or not, right? They let you know whether they like you or not. And when they do, they're very loyal. And they tell you where it's at. I like that. Bottom line, boom. They're just a joy and light up my life. I know that I would be lost without my four-legged kids.
What are you planning to perform?
Well, I don't really tell what I'm planning to perform. And the truth is, I am a wing it chick.
Okay.
So I have an idea what I'm going to do.
You're a singer, though.
I'm a singer, but I'm an entertainer. So I've always called myself an entertainer. I use the vessel of my voice to perform, but I'm an entertainer. I was raised here in the Catskill Mountains, and you know, I first started out, I was a singer, and the singer is opening for a comic, and don't be funny because the comic's funny, and you're supposed to sing, and that was what it was like. Well, And I no longer like that. The minute I started working alone, I said, oh, yay, I can be funny because I like to be funny. And it just, I'm just an organic performer. So when I say I don't really have my show exactly planned out because I have to see who's in front of me. I have an idea. I know a beginning, a middle, and end, basically. And then things happen depending on, which drives my husband crazy because he's the one at the board picking, cueing my music. But I work with tracks right now because of the situation. It just is, rather than get an orchestra in, which would be very costly. I work with tracks and I can drive him crazy because I will switch up depending on what I'm looking at. If you see someone out there and they're rolling their eyes, that's not going to work, but maybe this will. And that's what a performer does. That's what an entertainer should do, is look at the audience and really gear the show towards who's in front of them.
And can he keep up, your husband?
He's been very good at that.
Oh, good. Good. I'm glad to hear that.
But also, it's like, I'm not a, I'm a perfectionist in a lot of ways, like sound, but I'm okay with a flub. I'm okay with winging it. I find the exhilaration in just, being vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And going for it. And nobody's perfect. And people make mistakes. And I'm sure if you've seen a show and you see a live performer that you really admire and they make a mistake, but they cover it and they figure it out and they land on their feet, doesn't that make you more impressed by seeing someone do a perfect, not a thing out of whack? I like to see someone who knows how to, who makes a boo-boo and doesn't try to cover it up,
Well, there's an art in that.
And I love that. I think that's, to me, that shows me so much more. So I hope that my performances show people that I'm real, I'm down to earth, nobody's perfect, and I always just do my best to give everything I've got. That's it. That's all I can do.
And I see you give everything you've got to your outfit. You're dressed today in a magnificent outfit that I wish our listeners could see. But you clothe yourself through the boutique you have?
Well, I have always been my mother was a wonderful fashionista. My mother made all my clothes, and I always had – she made her clothes. She made magnificent gowns and, cause the Catskills were, Saturday night, you had to have a gown. And every Saturday night, she had a different gown because my dad was an entertainer. And, so she was known for her clothing. And I guess the apple didn't fall far from the tree.
What is the name of it again? Hippie?
The Funky Hippie Chic Boutique.
Some of our listeners may remember it from Coney Angle Lake, or it was on East Broadway.
Yeah.
And now you're...
Now I'm between the casino and the water park
in Monticello
on Resorts World Drive.
Let's remember the fundraiser that's coming up.
Which is always just such a wonderful, wonderful cause. Les Christ has always been a big part of this, by the way.
Yes, the animal rescue.
Yes. And
a number of other initiatives.
Yes, yes. He's always... And he called me and said, Patty, you want to do it? And of course... Absolutely, always. I'm just thrilled that they asked me. It's the second time I've done it for them, and I'm so happy to be doing it again.
So just a reminder, Friday, September 22nd at 8 o'clock, Patty Greco Sunshine will be performing at a fundraiser to benefit Catskill Animal Rescue, and that's at Forestburg Playhouse in the Tavern. Well, thank you, Patty.
My pleasure. Thank you, Valerie, for having me.
And that's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. A reminder, you can listen to the show and past episodes at wjffradio.org, and you can find all of our locally produced programs there as well. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Chatskill comes from 52 and Vine, a wine and spirit shop in Jeffersonville featuring local, national, and eclectic vintners and distillers. 52andvine.com. From the Upper Delaware Welcome Center at the Narrowsburg Union, featuring information about regional attractions and activities, along with products by the region's artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen at Catskills Curated. NarrowsburgUnion.com.
Set your controls for the heart of the sun and tune in to hear the psychedelic synth situations of electronic hairpieces with your host, Nikki Vito. In this new weekly program, I'll be spinning retro synth, psychedelic, and experimental records Thursday nights at 10 p.m. following Connect the Dots at 9. Only on Radio Catskill.
Listen local.
Hello, I'm Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News. Tune in to our headline news service for stories about indigenous communities across the country and around the world. Hear about top concerns facing Native nations. Tribal history, language, and culture is also part of indigenous life. Check out our headline news service to learn more. Tune in here for National Native News.
Weekdays during All Things Considered.
On Point is next, followed by Democracy Now! At noon. The forecast for the Catskills in northeast Pennsylvania, a potential for a stray shower or thunderstorm possible today and tonight and tomorrow. And tomorrow night, overnight, heavy rainfall into Wednesday. Later in the week, cooling off into the upper 60s. Radar indicating potential thunderstorms in the next hour in our area.
WJFF Jeffersonville, W233AH Monticello. You're listening to Radio Catskill. Public radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania.